Oh my goodness. Well, welcome. For those of you who are have led conversations or pastors or have done other presentations, you know the potential adrenaline that's pumping through my body right now, which is, I don't know where my notes are. So, we'll do this together, and we'll be in community with one another as we learn about our stories and learn about our connections. First wanted to say hello and a greetings to you all. Greetings from Earth Ministry, Washington Interfaith Power and Light. We are the Washington State affiliate of the National Interfaith Power and Light. We are based in Seattle. We are on the traditional lands of the Duwamish, and our staff operate and move in our in community across Washington State, and we partner with various faith communities, houses of worship, and individuals, spiritual communities, anyone who is connected and committed to the work of environmental justice, we want to partner with. Doesn't matter your faith tradition or your disconnection with the faith tradition, either way. I am Reverend A.C. Churchill. I am an ordained pastor within the Disciples of Christ tradition. My pronouns are they, them. And a little bit about us before we get started. So Earth Ministry, WIPL, that's what you'll hear us refer to it as. We are getting ready to enter into our third decade of work across Washington State. We started in Seattle, started with a group of Christian lay leaders and clergy who noticed that there were environmental concerns that the faith community wasn't coming out for. Most notably, our founders connected with some oil spills that were happening and wondered, where are the people of faith in this work? You know, our sacred texts from Christian perspectives, when we take together the First and the Second Testaments, they speak very clearly about care for the earth, about being connected to creation, and yet often our voices are missing in terms of community organizing spaces, in terms of action spaces. It doesn't mean that we are not there, right? We show up. But oftentimes, especially if you come from a more progressive tradition or a tradition that wants to distance yourself from harmful practices, harmful spiritual practices, you don't show up as a faithful person. You just show up and do the work. So our founders started with this question. What is the response of people of faith, of spiritual connections? Where are we in these conversations? And that expanded because we recognized that from Christian-centric spaces, we are not the only ones having these conversations. We are not the only people of faith having these conversations. That these conversations happen across spiritual traditions, religious traditions, and of people of good moral conscience, they're already doing this work. So our work expanded and has developed into several streams or several legs on a table. We do work within houses of worship, within spiritual communities, and you'll be hearing more about that in our upcoming workshops with our leaders around greeting congregation toolkits, which help support congregations, houses of worship, in their efforts to become more environmentally minded. Everything from basics to solar work and engaging questions of what their spiritual tradition says about connecting with care for creation, to some exciting things that we'll have happening in the future around things like eco-anxiety and eco-grief, although that's not part of our Greening Congregations toolkit, but it is part of the work that we do with our houses of worship and our partners. The other stream is around advocacy. because we recognize that helping individuals talk about and identify their spiritual traditions and how that connects to care for the earth, that's really important. And it is a foundation because we know that transformational change requires engaging systems, requires engaging larger systems and legislative systems in order to make big change. And putting the responsibility solely on individuals or individual congregations is irresponsible. So we have to hold corporations and our legislatures accountable. And as people of faith, we come in with a moral voice to do that work. So that's a little bit about what we do. Today is going to be primarily centered around stories. So I come from the South, and I come from Birmingham, Alabama, and I'm surrounded by storytellers. And I really think that as people of faith, of spiritual traditions, we too are storytellers. The communities that I've been involved in are predominantly white and have often forgot our stories or decided to take others and try to make them our own. So today is really about remembering and reconnecting with what is yours, what has shaped you to this point. What about your own faith and your own journey calls you to move beyond a pew, move beyond a pillow, move beyond a space to begin engaging in the larger work? And it's not an either or, we need both, right? We need to do the reflection and the study and the meditation and the education and then take that out and do that in the world and come back with what we learn and reflect again. So a little bit about my own story and how my faith shapes this work. So as I said earlier, I'm a Disciple of Christ pastor. I'm not sure how familiar you all are with Disciples of Christ. We are a mainline tradition, a mainline Protestant tradition. We move across political spectrums. But the churches that I center myself in are ones of inclusion and ones of justice. And I say that we are people of the table. We are table people. We have as our symbol a chalice because we like to eat and drink. Lutherans, do y'all like to do that? UUs, do y'all like to do that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. People who are not connected to spiritual traditions, do y'all like to do that? You like to eat and drink. Yeah, we disciples like to do that, too. But at the table, we're told, within my tradition, that that is where equity happens and where equality happens. Because at the table, everyone is welcome. Everyone. All means all. Y'all means all. Everyone is welcome. No exceptions. But that doesn't mean all behavior is welcome. So you can come and bring yourself. But any behavior that you bring that is harmful or violent towards someone has got to go. And you will be invited to explore that. You'll be invited to figure out ways in which those behaviors come up in your own life. And that for me is a central core because it's about hospitality and care for another. Right? So I can come to the table and bring my full self. I can bring my anxiety, I can bring my rage, I can bring my depression and my elation. What I can't bring is harm to another. What's not welcome is me hurting creation and hurting my siblings. So I approach this work of caring for the world from that place of hospitality. Because my invitation to the table is not barred in any way. There are no barriers to me getting there. But there is accountability that I have to treat people in the ways in which they need to be treated. And what are ways that are good for them and good for creation. Just a little bit about why I do this work and what in my own tradition grounds me in continuing to come back again and again every time I mess up, every time I say something ridiculous, every time I do something that causes harm, that I'm still invited back as long as I change some behavior. So one of the things I'd like to do is, as you all are getting ready to think, because we're going to transition in just a minute into your own stories, and you thinking about what about your spiritual tradition brings you into this work. The staff and I talked about this, about them sharing a little bit about their traditions, or the reasons and ways in which they engage in this work, or engage with faith communities if they are not connected to faith traditions. I'd like to start. Is there a staff who would like to start, or may I mutually invite you? Okay. Jessica, may I start with you?
Hello, hello.
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 I'm going to remove my mask while I'm talking to you up here. So my name is Sister Jessica Zimmerly, and I am the Advocacy Director at Earth Ministry Whitewell. I come from the Lutheran tradition, so I'm the born and bred ELCA-er on staff. For me, it's really grounding to be able to approach this work through my faith. Can I see like a show of hands of other Lutherans maybe in the room?
Used to be
is okay. That's an okay answer. Okay, so for me, a couple of core tenets that I bring from the Lutheran tradition into this work is values of grace and reform. So these are a couple of core Lutheran charisms, I would say, that come out of our tradition, dating back to the Reformation, of looking around and saying, huh, how could we be in more right relationship with one another, with the systems in which we operate, with the world that is around us, and imagine a different path forward, a third way, something that's more life-giving to all. And then realizing, you know, each of us has a role to play in working toward that vision, that reform, but none of us are going to do it perfectly. So Luther talked a lot about being both saint and sinner, and that is, for me, very liberating to know that it's literally impossible to be an environmental saint. I will use fossil fuels in my daily life. I will use petrochemicals in my daily life. It is the world that we walk through. And if I spent my time, you know, beating myself up for that, that's one option. I could do that. But with grace, I'm able to let go and focus on what my gifts are and what I can lean into. For me, that is very liberating and gives me hope because I look around and I say, you know, God is at work through each and every one of us, and we have all of the pieces of the puzzle, and, you know, it's not up to one of us to be the savior in the story, but we can collectively work together trust that God is at work within us and through us, and have grace when we mess up, and have grace when we know we can't do it all. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit. I'm happy to talk more over a cup of tea or anything about what, you know, expanding upon this or hear from you. So I would love to invite Kia to come share her story.
Okay, so I'm Kia. And I enter into this work from a completely different angle. I do not have an environmental background. I was not born in a faith tradition, and I do not have a faith tradition now. So I do sometimes feel silly working at a faith-based environmental justice org. But why I do this work, I do it specifically when I started because of Maddie and Jessica, and at the time Leanne, and everything that they were doing. So I don't know if you all know this, but if you look around the room, I am a little bit different than everyone else. And I'm from Seattle, and that's kind of how it always is. I'm usually the only black person in the room, and oftentimes, I don't know if any of you are Latine people, I kind of double dip as the only one in the room as well in certain spaces. But because Seattle is overwhelmingly white, they're also overwhelmingly comfortable with just staying where they are. Mm-hmm. They know what to say. They know how to like frame everything as if they're very, very caring and actually doing work. And that's not true. So one thing I loved about Earth Ministry when I interviewed, you know, I get on screen and it's three white people doing environmental justice work, is that they are truly collaborative. So they are not out here just, you know, talking the talk, they are doing the walk. They collaborate with indigenous leaders. If there's anything from another race or, you know, a black church that we're working with, they're not going to just be like, we need black representation, like let's grab this church and make it look good on why, you know, why you should care about fossil fuels in Tacoma. And like touting them around as the example of the work that needs to be done and who are impacted. They follow the lead, I guess it's we now, I've been here a year. we follow the lead of the communities actually impacted. So we are not telling them what to do, what they should feel, what they should think. We do what they feel is best, and even other like coalition partners. It is who is most working with frontline communities instead of, you know, being like other environmental organizations who just do what they want to do because that's what they want to do, be damned what frontline communities want. So that's why I'm here. I don't have a magical story. I just found the job. And
educational expertise.
Yes. Well, I guess. But in grad school, I did study comparative religion, but I am late antique Judaism and early Christianity, and I study the stars, so I'm still not quite a fit, but I know the Bible, so I think that helps. And so that's why I'm here. I truly believe and support the work that we do, and of all of, not all of, but of most of the orgs in Seattle, I do think we do it best. And that's it. So I will invite Maddie. Yeah.
And ask him to join with Jupiter.
Oh, yeah. Just follow my green laser if you want to see it out there.
Thanks, Kia. I'm Maddie Smith. My pronouns are they, them, and I am on staff as the operations manager, but we're small. So I also get to do advocacy and be here with you all, which is something I really enjoy. My faith tradition is Unitarian Universalism, which is two big words that people may not know that much about. And so as a tradition, like we don't come together around any beliefs about a higher power or specific religious practices or theology. Instead, we come together in a covenant, which is formed by our 7, now 8, Unitarian Universalist principles. And if I had to rattle them all off right now, that might be difficult, so I'll rattle off a few. I think the specific ones that bring me to this work of both liberating the earth and liberating people are, our first principle is the inherent worth and dignity of all people. And like, what would it actually look like to like create a world where we believed and practiced the inherent work and dignity, worth and dignity of all people? A principle that sometimes gets called the UU Green principle is the 7th principle, which is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And I think that resonates with a lot of people of faith, not just Unitarian Universalists. And so like imagining like what would it actually look like to believe ourselves as part of this interdependent web and like see harm done to some as harm done to all. And then as in, I think a lot of predominantly white faith traditions, right now, like, we're in a big reckoning around racial justice and, like, you know, how in practice, like, we say we care about the inherent worth and dignity of all people, but, like, in practice, we mess up and we cause harm. And so there's been a movement recently in my congregation, recently adopted the eighth principle, which has not been adopted denomination-wide, but has been adopted by 200 or so individual Unitarian Universalist congregations. And that is journeying towards spiritual wholeness by dismantling racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institution. So, like, so there's a lot there that we've been talking about. And I think this idea of, like, we don't quite know what spiritual wholeness looks like when so much harm is being done to folks and to the earth. And so that's something I think a lot about. Like, even though the eighth principle is centered around anti-racism work and, like, becoming a more welcoming faith tradition to all people, like, it also really, to me, connects with this work of environmental justice, in that, like, can we be spiritually whole when so much harm is being done, and, like, what would that look like? So that just raises a lot of questions for me and brings me back to this, like, deeply moral spiritual work that, like, is really hard and isn't going to be perfect. Yeah, and I think, you know, beyond UU spaces, a lot of that can resonate with other folks as well. I think I'll leave it there, AC.
Thank you, Maddie.
Yeah.
Do a snap, grab, pop, handshake.
Thank you for laughing at my ridiculous jokes. I really appreciate it. I fancy myself to be humorous sometimes. Do I?
Story time.
So, you've heard a little bit about our stories, about the reasons why we engage in this work, and now we would like to invite you to do the same. So, we have a resource that put right here. I'll grab one for myself. I'd like you to think about. We're going to give you some time. Invite you to... You can stay in this space, but don't travel too far. Because I don't think I'm allowed to ring the bell. I don't think I've been given permission to do that, and might distract and throw off a bunch of other things. So don't go too far, but we'll give you some time, and then about 15 minutes, and then we'll recollect, reconvene, and then come together. So, and talk about these together. So one of the first pieces is when you see a call, where do you see a call to environmental justice? If that phrase, environmental justice, feels a little uncertain about what you think it means, don't worry. We have a workshop coming up about what environmental justice is and how it's different from environmental stewardship and environmental advocacy. But thank you very much. Appreciate you. So when you think, and we'll get y'all to the top too if y'all want some. Where do you see a call to environmental justice within sacred stories or religious teachings, within your own, or within ones you've been informed by? Thanks, Mary.
Oh, yeah.
Appreciate it. Second one is spiritual experiences or encounters with the divine. Where in your own life have you had those moments where you're like, that's beyond just beautiful. I need to do something about it. I need to reconnect. I need to act upon it. Where do you see a call to environmental justice within connection with loved ones, neighbors, communities, and the global human family? And there are more questions on the back, and I would invite you to think about just the top one, because we're going to get more to how you live this piece out in our last workshop of the week, which is our advocacy workshop. So I'm going to give a bit of homework. One, you got to write it. Or if you want to, or reflect, keep it within, and then bring it back for our other workshops. But are there any questions, thoughts, before you are released to reflect?
Do you have any pens?
No pens!
There might be some.
Oh, that is helpful. Way to go, y'all.
I was
going to
say there are itty bitty pencils.
Oh, hold on. One. So no, no. Tell me how to work it.
Well,
tell me how to work it. Oh, wait. Yeah. Oh, figured it out. Look.
There you go.
Thanks, eighth inch plywood, for your efforts.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, here. I will. I promise I'll get you back. Here we go. Thank you, Meg. You know, that is a logical question writing implements. Of course.
Oh, great.
Of course. So, take some time and...
I got a question.
Yes, a question.
So environment means specifically like ecological, right? Not... not sociological or economic or anything along those lines.
Say more about those ologicals.
Like specifically like... plants and climate and like, I mean, is that what we're, or is there other further outreaching implications of the word environment?
Yes, and I think in this instance we would invite you to think about the earth and about the plants and creation and the inhabitants of it, but also the ways in which climate change and fossil fuels, and I'm also going to say if any of my colleagues have a deeper reflection on what that feels like it means to you, here you go.
Yeah, I'll expand a little too and say, you could get, so with these three different areas that we're reflecting on, you could just focus in on how we interact with the earth. But I encourage you to also look a bit beyond and think, like, what are the core values that guide me? So, like, one prominent Christian teaching is love of the neighbor, right? And that shows up all throughout the Gospels. So how does that apply? How does that religious teaching apply when we're looking around and seeing how we're interacting with one another in terms of disproportionate pollution levels falling in? Communities that are indigenous, black, and other people of color, et cetera. So, you can take some of those other things that might be keystones or anchors of your spirituality and think how they might apply beyond just thinking like, oh yeah, Genesis tells us creation is good. That's part of it. And we can go and look at the intersectionality of the conversations. And if you're a little bit stumped with this, it's okay. Put down what starts to come forward and we'll be in dialogue and work through it together as well. So you don't have to have all the answers within you right now.
I look at these and I kind of take, I take a secular look at these and there's really not anything that I can contribute really, I don't think, I don't know. Like sacred stories or religious teachings, I'm not really involved with that much anymore. And I take more of the earth as a gift to us, as a just a, not necessarily creation, but something that's there that we're on, that we take responsibility for reasons other than a commitment to some higher power or whatever. It should be a commitment to ourselves.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's great. That absolutely fits there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just okay, I would say perhaps maybe expanding our understanding of what sacred stories are and what those where they come from. And so a poem or a story or a family tradition or could be sacred and is sacred. So it doesn't have to be something that was passed by a council hundreds of years ago that other things were eliminated from it. So.
And if you look on the backside, there's a list of values. So all of us have core values that guide how we show up in the world. So that can also be a helpful starting point to dive in and think what these values mean to you in relationship to this this topic.
There is no right or wrong answer, or good or bad answer. They are just your experiences.
Oh, great insight.
Yeah, if we could come back, since we've had a couple people, if we could come back at 11:20. That'd give some people who just left us some time to think in. Thanks, y'all. Well, to honor our time together, we'll give space for those who are still coming back. There you go. See y'all coming. And we'll go ahead and enter into this conversation with one another. So, wondering, as you all looked at these particular pieces, the sacred stories of your family or your faith tradition, spiritual experiences or connections you have with your community, what are some of the things that came up for you? And I am going to but I'll walk around and turn this off and ask if you'd like to share reading with the mic. Are there things that came up for people? Yeah.
Oh, hold on, I'm coming. Sorry, I missed this. For any of them?
Yeah.
Or
just yeah, let's
kind of start on this.
Let's start with one. Sacred stories or religious teachings.
Well, I mean, this isn't exactly what I wrote down, but a common religious value is wonder and awe.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, start there and go from there. I will say that the two I wrote down were, it all started in a garden. And I had something interesting today that I think about, you know, we say this a lot. Jesus blessed the water by being baptized in it. And so when he came out of the water, he blessed the water. Mm-hmm. But what came to me today that's never come to me before is Jesus blessed the wilderness mm-hmm. when he came out of the wilderness. I was like, oh, yeah. What yeah. about loving the desert and the
yeah.
dry places?
Right. Amazing. Others sacred stories or religious teachings that kind of inform this work for you?
I was drawn back to something that I remember very clearly as a child. So I don't know why it stuck with me, but I'll just choose to to think more about that, I guess, and the importance that it continues to hold. But the building on like the story in Genesis in the Bible, the language that was used in the translation that I was introduced and was like, you have dominion mm-hmm. over or with or yeah. creation. And I specifically remember my family explaining to me that dominion didn't mean domination. Mm-hmm. And we sort of created this definition of what dominion meant in our family unit that was more centered on not the root of the word that could come from domination. but building on that and really thinking through what that meant as care for creation. Mm. And then a step further, just thinking through creation. Like as a child, I was taught that humans are part of creation.
Mm.
Creation is not just animals and trees and the natural world, but that if we leave humans out of our definition of creation, then we have a lot of issues.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you.
I know that it's not normally thought of in this sense, but I forever have thought that love your neighbor doesn't just mean the people who are here today,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but it means the people who are here in the future. And if I'm loving my neighbor, then I need to not do things that harm their lives in the future.
Sure. Yeah.
So that is part of what informs my, it needs to be here for the next generation, or I didn't create it, but I would concur with the next seven generations that is in some native cultures inspired to. But I think that's in the Bible. I mean, I think it's there. That's where neighbors are.
Others, sacred stories, or spiritual experiences, or things that kind of touched and moved you.
I can share one that I was sharing with Ed that I think could fall in this category, but. As a child, I grew up in the Central Valley of California, and we'd have kind of dewy mornings, and it would get pretty hot on summer days or late spring. And I live two blocks from my elementary school, but it would take a good 30, 40 minutes to get there because all along the way, I would stop and see the worms that were drying out on the sidewalk and say, huh. Like, you're part of God's creation, and this isn't really fair to you that we put sidewalk in your home. So I would like to give you back to where you can yes. survive the day.
Yeah,
so bless my mom. She would patiently, step-by-step, wait with me while I took all of the worms off of the sidewalk on my way to school. And so for me, that is an encounter with the sacred, right? of seeing... my responsibility to in a way take responsibility for what humankind has done to put barriers for other life, but then also to see God in all creatures, big and small, worms included.
Yes. So I'm not going to put a word to the experience because I don't know how to. But if that didn't come across earlier, I'm really into astronomy and the stars. And I grew up in cities though, Seattle, and then I went to Brooklyn, and then I was in Hawaii, and that's an island, but still lots of light pollution. And then I went to the Big Island where Mauna Kea is. And just being there and seeing the Milky Way for the first time. And it's like almost comparable to what it looks like here, but there's no mountains in the way, so you just see it completely. And in that moment, I have no idea, I'm a crybaby, so that could be part of it. I just started like sobbing at like seeing this for the first time. And before that, I worked at a planetarium. Had only seen it, fake on the sky. And so seeing it like real without all this light pollution and then being mad about light pollution and hard headlights just ruining the night for me. And then that went on. Now I have like a big life dream of like doing like my travels based on like dark night skies. So yeah, I think that was quite an experience that is still here. I just don't know how I would say divine or spiritual or whatever, but it was something.
Awesome. I think
something that I was going to say, at least in reading the Christian holy text, there's a lot of parables and metaphor and description that is with the earth, and I think that is like talking about seeds or fish and bread, or like it's setting, but it's not just a backdrop, it's part of the sacred text. And I think yeah, for me, like something as simple as seeing like the first flowers coming up in the spring can be really powerful. Thinking about new life and how death doesn't have the final word, but I think that looking at to the world in the outdoors can have a lot of beautiful metaphors spiritually.
Mm-hmm. What about connections with family members, or you know, biological or chosen, or neighbors? Individual. Oh, Maddie.
So I've done a lot of bird watching here at Holden, and that's everywhere I go, so you might have seen me wandering around with my binoculars. But in thinking about, you know, expanding the idea of neighbor into like all beings, like that's sort of what I see. And I like to talk to the animals, you know, when I see them. Yesterday, Jess and I saw a pika up high on the tailings pile, and, you know, we talked to it for a while. It was great. But the other day, I had this experience with three sooty grouses just on the 10 Mile Falls Trail. And I saw the same, pretty sure the same three grouses today on Chalet Hill. They seemed to really like wandering around. But like, we just had this experience where I stopped in the middle of the trail for like 20 minutes. And they just kept walking to closer to me, like making their little sort of chicken noises. And like, I felt like we were seeing each other, and they were like, oh, hey neighbor, we're just foraging and wandering up the hillside and this burn forest. And like, I've just been thinking a lot about that experience and like the ways we talk to creatures or like don't interact with them or talk to them. So that sort of fits into family and neighbors. And this also relates to one thing I've been thinking about in terms of coming up here. I would love to see a white-tailed ptarmigan, but they're up pretty high. And I've only brought chacos, so. But you know, they're struggling in this time of climate crisis because, so then the winter, they're entirely white. And then in the summer, they molt their feathers to blend in with the rocks. And so they're kind of mottled brown, black, with a little bit of white. And they're struggling, not so much here, I don't think, but in other parts of the world. When it doesn't snow or the snow melts too fast because of climate change, and like they're all of a sudden stuck out on the rocks being totally white, which makes them really vulnerable to predators in unnatural ways that haven't always been that way. So I'm thinking about the grasses that I saw, who are their relatives. Like that's a reason also why I do this work, is for my feathered neighbor friends.
Yeah, if we're on the connections thing, I personally think that this is one of the toughest elements that we deal with in this whole thing. As time has gone on, I mean, I'm a little older now, and I remember it used to not be so hard to connect with people because people tended to be out more and more gregarious or whatever. And it seems like as technology has increased, our connectivity has decreased. And even to the extent, I feel like I like to do my little part for the environment by not driving a car. And everywhere I go, I walk, and it frustrates me that I'm always alone when I'm walking. No matter what city I'm in, no matter where I'm going, small city, big city, if I'm walking down the busy road, I'm alone. Everybody else is in their little metal boxes. And I try not to let it bug me, but it does. And it just seems like nothing, we're not moving towards the connectivity part that says, we gotta stop driving these little metal boxes around. And if we did, you know, this one great thing about this village is that we're all walking around. And it tends to make us notice each other, talk to each other, get to know each other a little better. And it's wonderful. I don't get that opportunity very much because of the way my life is, but that's, you know, I think that's really a big part of the puzzle myself.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for naming something that is, you know, sometimes within naming the feelings that we have, it's oftentimes we just name the ones that make us feel good. But naming the things that cause tension and dissonance within us is also holy. So thank you for that.
So when I reflect on this section of this worksheet, which this is not my first time doing a worksheet, one story that comes forward that has been really formative for me was being at a rally and hearing a youth, I don't know, he was maybe 10, who grew up in the south side of Seattle, sharing his story and listening to that and seeing the difference from my experience. And I just will always remember this kid being like, you know, it wasn't until recently that I realized not everybody has asthma. Because everyone in my community has asthma. All the other kids I play with have asthma. And when you look at the air pollution across Seattle, it is significantly heavier down in the south area. It's been kind of a sacrifice zone with the port and the airport and the highways coming through. And there's actually over a decade's difference in life expectancy between the north and south part of the city. And that's a common reality in many major cities and communities. So for me, hearing this youth share his experience and his truth drives me towards the environmental justice component of our work and saying that I do want a future where young ones don't think that asthma is a normal, everyone has it reality.
Hal has something.
I have three things on that list. I live in a wonderful city, and neighborhood connections are all over the place and a huge part of my life. I find myself participating in native fire-based rituals, and my life with wild species is lovely.
So if we move to the
I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
I guess when I think of when I reflect on the life of Jesus and what he showed up and called us to do, there's a lot of it that involved a lot of societal and economic and structural changes that he wanted to see in the world, and it's hard to not notice that we've moved away from that with the environment as well. Like when I hear some of these stories and like, yeah, there's things, the problems with these boxes and these people with asthma, and we tend to take them as a personal morality or what can we do rather than, you know, how do we change the world and change how things are structured so that like, you know, this is not a thing anymore. And we tend not to see that in a lot of religious traditions, unfortunately, but you do see it in the work of Jesus when you really, you know, get into it rather than just from a religious personal morality type of perspective that we often get.
Yeah, thanks. And that kind of leads us into the back section, which is one of the things to kind of highlight about our work is that we are intentionally multi-faith, so we bring in elements and connections with Christianity and other faith traditions. While we primarily have been historically Christian-centric, we are working to actively expand and connect and learn from other faith traditions, which is this part on the back that recognizes that across many faith traditions, we, although teachings and doctrines and creeds may be different, we share common religious values. And so, Bertie, you've already shared one about wonder and awe that is amazing, that just kind of the different traditions share. I'm wondering if other things came up for you, so for some of these religious values, or these ones that stuck out to you. Oh, yes.
Well, one that's not on here, but one that stuck out to me as in many other religions, and also something that is part of my relationship with creation care and environmental justice is love, and also hope.
Love and hope, yeah. Mm. Thank you for those. We'll come back to these in our continuing conversations. So I'll make sure to take a picture of it so we don't, for other presenters who would like to use the dry erase board. Are there others, these kind of common religious values that inform your own? And if you have others that aren't mentioned, we'd love to hear them.
And you could also kind of reflect on the stories and what you put on the front side, like looking at what's on our board, there's so many values within those.
Wonderful.
So for us, this is the practice of like pulling out what is behind this idea that dominion doesn't mean domination.
Right.
It's a value of stewardship.
Right.
How do you guys measure your progress in what you're trying to do?
That's a question for us. How do we measure our progress?
Yeah, I guess my underlying question is, what are the main goals of your organization, and how are you measuring your progress towards those goals?
That's a great idea, and that's a great question, and I'm going to invite you back to the next workshop for that.
Good deal.
Yeah, of course. You can learn more about kind of the goals that we have through some of the material we have up here, so you don't necessarily have to wait until tomorrow. But we will touch on those throughout the coming workshops. So as we move, hey, thank you for continuing.
You got it. Well,
as I look at this, stewardship and sustainability are really connected for me, and I think that comes from the 4 years that I did undergrad. I was a canoe guide in the Boundary Waters Wilderness Canoe Area. And so if any of you are familiar with the Boundary Waters, that experience was transformational for me in a lot of ways because I got to accompany people in the wilderness who often hadn't been there before. Many years ago at this point, but the stewardship and sustainability part of that has continued as there is potential mining happening in northern Minnesota and on the edge of the Boundary Waters and in the Boundary Waters. So that has led to me continuing to care about this place, though I live in Washington, thinking about these experiences I had with youth and adults in this place, and that that wasn't an issue back then, 10 years ago. And so that is how sustainability and stewardship has changed for that part in the world, because of human influence and the need for these resources.
Off-topic question, what are they mining out of the Boundary Water?
Copper sulfide.
Yeah,
and there's no safe way to do it.
No.
Which is complicated because as we try to move away from fossil fuels and into electrifying our grid, you need more copper. And so the problem is that part of the reason for the high demand for copper is we're moving more toward electricity, which we want to do, but then you got to find the copper and do it in a sustainable way, which, as Dora said,
in a wilderness area.
Yeah.
The
largest. Those are complicated things.
Coal-fired power plants.
Yeah, it seems like all of this work that we do is complicated and nuanced. And to try to simplify it does it an injustice. So I think the kind of transition question that I would like us to think about in our last little bit of time here is, it's wonderful and important and grounding to think about the ways in which your own individual lives have been shaped by your experiences, by the stories, by your communities, by neighbors, and
how do we take those things out? For me, specifically, in thinking about the work, it makes me wonder about how faithful voices, spiritual voices, show up and bring our stories into community organizing, into community practices. So I would invite you to think, ask a question and then kind of give you some time to think about it. I wonder, what do you see, or where do you see, maybe not what, or where, what do you see is the unique voice that spiritual communities, that people of faith, bring to collaborative work? It could be around environmental justice. I think it works across environment and across in justice issues. But as we appear, people who are connected to something beyond ourselves, when we show up, what is the voice that we are bringing? What are things that we are bringing that add to the conversation? And I see some eyebrow raises, not knowing what that perhaps means or understand. I can say more, so that would be helpful. Yeah.
I mean, I think this has already been touched on, but you can approach environmental issues from a lot of different perspectives. You can think about it in terms of economics, and sometimes a choice that is good for living more lightly on the earth and is actually more economical, like hanging your clothes out to dry or something like that. But often it does require, it is more expensive, or requires more time. And so if it's just grounded in economics, then that maybe isn't your motivation. And maybe it could be grounded in politics, but not everything will get you through making some of those harder decisions. And so I think I've heard many people mention it as something that brings like a moral perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is one critical thing. And I think that there's also something powerful about the community and the something being part of not just something I'm doing as an individual, but being part of something that's being repeated over and over again by other people wrestling with these same questions and striving to consider how their choices and their advocacy can change things.
Mm. Okay. Nice. Yeah.
I think one thing they bring, particularly when it comes to like a Christian community in America, is they bring the numbers, and they have the base and number of people to make changes. You know, unfortunately, those changes are not often what we would like to see for a lot of different reasons currently. But sure, it's true that if you want to get something done in this society, you need. It's not an option to not have that group, as at least some of them, as part of your, you know, movement and you know, ideals.
Yeah. I'd like to offer two pieces that I'll stay far away from the med. Two pieces that I've noticed in community organizing. Primarily, kind of my work comes in through anti-racism work and immigration work. Before I started at Earth Ministry, WIPL. And two of the kind of unique perspectives that I have noticed that as people who are grounded in spiritual traditions that we bring
One has already been mentioned, which I'm glad you mentioned it, which is hope. And the other is lament. Hope and lament. Both are voices within the mix of that when combined with science and economics and history, when combined with understandings of why is it that those parts of Seattle have higher air pollution? When we look historically, the reasons, like when it's combined with those voices that we, as people of spiritual traditions and faithful backgrounds, that we bring another piece of the movement. So lament is something that Hal was talking about this morning, that within a lot of the Christian circles and experiences that he's been connected to, that they have talked a lot about Jubilee. In a lot of Christian circles I have centered myself in, we haven't talked about lament very much. There's this tendency within predominantly white churches, right, Christian churches, to kind of paint rosy images over things or to lean into praise, but the hard grief, we forget the power of lament, because lament was a public action. Lament was an action that was out, lived out into the public space, that called out the powers that be, that said, you have caused this harm to me, to my community, and I will not be silent anymore. Because the pain that is happening to my siblings, to creation, will not be brushed aside. I refuse to let it be so. So we have the power to name, and we're not the only ones, but we have the tradition and the stories that come along with us, to name the grief, the groaning, the crying out that exists within creation, within our siblings, within our environment, within the creatures of this world, of the actions that we have perpetuated harm against. Right? So we have not only the ability to call out, but to call ourselves in as participants in that work. And then the other is hope, right? Because hope is this, there's strength in hope that says what is does not have to be. There can be something different. There can be a different way of living and interacting and being with one another if we were to but come together. Because it's not just one, it's the community. We need the community to do this work. One of kind of my favorite quotes about hope, I'm pretty sure it comes from St. Francis of Assisi, but if it doesn't, I apologize. I'm a disciple. We're not very hierarchical. I'll borrow things. Anyway, it says this, hope has two beautiful daughters. One called anger and one called courage. Anger to name what is, and courage to think something can be done about it. So we as people who take the stories that inform us of stewardship, of sustainability, of wonder and awe, we wrap all of these pieces into ourselves, into the community work that we do, and we provide or are part of things that bring resilience to the work, because this work needs resilience, because it's not a quick fix. It's going to take investment, it's going to take time, it's going to take energy to do this work. And so as we partner with coalitions and scientists and lawyers and doctors and mothers and parents and fathers, we partner with families to do this work, and people who don't have families, like
May we bring those pieces with us. May we remind ourselves of the hope and the possibilities and the stories that ignite our imaginations and ground us for this work. I would invite you to come to the rest of our workshops. We're gonna have some information on greening congregations where you get some of those nuts and bolts, those toolkits, those goals that we have as an organization. Where you, in the next one, you'll learn a little bit more about the connections between environmental justice and the differences between environmental justice, environmental stewardship, the history of kind of intentionally bringing in justice and equity practices. And then some, our final one will be around advocacy that is happening within Washington State. But the practices around advocacy can be taken anywhere. They're not just dependent upon being within the state. We thank you all so much for being here, for your participation and the ways in which you have shared your stories, and invite you to continue to think about the ways in which these things impact and inform your lives. So, thanks, y'all.
Thanks.
Thank you. There is a sign-up sheet going around right now. If you would please fill it out so we can get to know you and you can get to know us better, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you.